Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise with us to help us grow our business. On this episode, I'm extremely excited because we're going to be talking about massive growth and what to look out for that. Maybe mergers that don't go as well as one thinks, but also a different way to look at the IT business. So if you are in IT, which I assume that you are, if you're listening to this episode, stick around. We have an awful lot to share with you. For those who don't know, my name is Gary Lafferty. I am your host today. I'm also the founder and CEO of Authority Accelerators, where we drive more revenue to tech leaders so they can close more deals by sharing them and moving them to become authorities in their field rather than just another expert. So without further ado, let's get on with today's episode. Derek, it's an absolute pleasure and honor to have you here today. Why don't we just start off by sharing a little bit about who you are, where you are, and what is it that you do? So,
thanks, Gary. It's great to be here. I'm the president and CEO of Affinity. We're an IT service provider in central New Jersey, really focused on the relationship component of IT. I always say people usually have horrible relationships with technology in general, especially if they're working for a company that doesn't have really good standard IT services. So we're really about the relationship with our clients, our employees, our partners, and with technology. How do we relate to that? How do we structure that?
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait to talk about relationships because, you know, especially in tech, we talk about relationships, but we don't really do relationships, not as well as we should. So I can't wait to dive into that. But before we do, I would like to take you back a little bit so that people get to know you a little bit better. You've had quite a journey in your career. You started off in IT support and then you went into business leadership. At what point of your career did you realize that you were more of a business sales revenue generating guy rather than the IT tech guy?
Probably when I first started doing IT tech work. I started out in a facilities position and then got given some technology training and started doing, you know, troubleshooting and found that I was really not that good at that. I don't really like that. I get bored with it very quickly. I just want a solution. So I moved into leadership at that point into more of a operations leadership. I'd done in the biotech space a lot of kind of more on the production side, facility side, and then also always had IT reporting to me. So it was always part of my job and I understood it. So it was easier, but I've always looked at it a different perspective, like being a, how is it going to impact our business? Not so much what's the cool new tech. So That was my journey from being a IT support person in 2005 or so to becoming operations person for 5 or 10 years. I'd hired a couple MSPs, so I knew the IT services space. And then I got recruited by an IT service provider who actually used to be my provider to come to work for them when I left a company. And that turned into a 5-year journey of trying to figure out what I want to do with my life because they had a lifestyle company. It was not a growth company. And I've always been interested in growth and startups. At some point, somebody said, let's try to buy them. And so we bought them in 2016 and had a real rough couple of years because they were a lifestyle company. They had lost a big contract. We didn't right-size the company right away. But that's when I found out that I'm really in the sales side. That's where I really excel. I tell you, my mother always said you could sell ice to Eskimos. And I never believed her and I never wanted to work for commission. And so when it was my company, we bought the company. Now I wasn't working for commission. I was working for lifestyle and making sure that we could grow the company. Took off on the sales side. I rebranded the company. This company was called Dynamic Strategies. We rebranded as Velocity, similar to Affinity with the IT, and rebranded it and really focused on clients first. And I think that's a, if there's any message I could give to somebody around wanting to become a sales-driven organization, is you got to get operations out of the way.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that because that's a really interesting point. You know, there'll be listeners here and people watching this particular episode and go, well, I know sales is important, but we're the tech people, right? We started this because we're engineers, we're coders, we're developers. That's why we started this tech. And I'm not really great at that sales part. What advice can you give to those who are listening, those tech founders who have predominantly grown their business through referral and word of mouth, but have now reached that plateau where they've kind of run out of that, right? They just need to get to the next level. What kind of insights could you share with us, Derek?
I think it starts with most, you see a lot of people in our space that come in with a marketing plan or the sales plan, and they skip the most important first step is, who are you? What are you about? What do you believe in? What is that core belief of you? Like for us, for Affinity right now, it's about relationships. Our primary driver is genuine relationships. That guides everything we do. When we pivoted with going from dynamic strategies to velocity, it was all about our clients. And we started really focusing on that. And that's where this genuine relationship has kind of developed out of that since we sold the company and now we're starting. But really found that velocity, it was really about making decisions quickly, helping clients make decisions quickly, being there for the clients. And once we got those core values and everything set up, then we could start talking about the marketing plan, because then it starts to measure. A lot of people want to start with a marketing plan, or they hire a company to do appointment setting, but they've never done the work previously. And if they don't know how to work, this is my big thing, is I went through a whole period at the beginning of owning Velocity where I call it the imposter syndrome. I was the CEO. I really hadn't done it before. I've been a leader before, but not in that role. And you need to reach out and find other people. So I found a Vistage group, which is a CEO group that is not focused on tech. It's focused on all different industries. But I started to learn a lot about, there's the steps in that process. If you want to grow, you have to redefine everything. And I will say the other thing is, I mentioned it earlier, you got to get the operations team out of the way. Because if you are operationally focused for a company, you will find ways to kill deals.
Why don't we talk a little bit about that? Because that's twice you mentioned that. And, you know, each time you mention it, my brain goes, that sounds important. That's a really important fact. We need to dig deeper into that. Could you explain a little bit more when you say get the operations out of the way? What is your version of what that means?
I'll give you a great example. We had onboarded a client. It was like 100 users or so. And their contact there was difficult to deal with. And I had a senior IT person in our leadership team who constantly came to our leadership meeting saying, we need to fire this client. They're unprofitable. They're not worth. He's a pain in the rear end, blah, 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 right? And I said, well, show me how unprofitable they are. And this went on for a month or so. And one of the other senior leaders got frustrated about hearing it and went and found out whether they were profitable or not. And they were 70% profitable. And this guy wanted to fire him. He was the operations guy, didn't like dealing with people. It's not his skill set. He was in the wrong role having to deal with this guy. We moved that guy to a new person who could deal with him and manage him and didn't get upset when he sent nasty emails and things like that. And he is still a client of the company we sold to today and would be considered an ideal client. And I always say, we make ideal clients. We don't onboard ideal clients. Because one of the things I find with operations people is they want, when I go out to sell, we'll have a package that we want everybody to fit into, and people don't fit into packages neatly. And so I'll sell it anyhow, and I'll adjust the package to make it. And then the operations people go, you sold a horrible deal. And I'm saying, no, I sold a deal that now you have to figure out how to move him or them to the ideal client.
I think that's a really interesting thing, Derek, because if you look at a typical marketing 101 for tech or sales 101 for tech, where a lot of the listeners here will be kind of loosely following that. Sure. It would be find your niche, go down that niche, don't try, and the advice is don't try and diverse too far because then you can't grow and you can't scale, and try and bring it back in. But what you're saying is there's okay to bend it every now and again, but rather than directly trying to find that needle in a haystack ICP, you can actually mold and make your own ICP. And still grow.
I would say that I probably should tell you what happened. We sold the company. Somebody else bought it, and they're all those clients are over at that other company. I left a year and a half ago, and now I'm restarted a company. So those clients are still there. And I would say there's probably 5 clients that were in that 100 user category where if we weren't flexible, we would have never been able to support them. Because they had internal people. Some of them have an internal IT person. Some have internal knowledgeable people who want to do things a certain way. When you get out of that 50 user category and start to get into the 100 user category, my stance is you better be flexible or you're not going to win deals. Now, I will tell those 5 clients now do almost all their stuff the way we do it. Because as their technology grew or changed, we would come in with options and talk to them and have a good relationship and make recommendations and structure it and say, you know, we do it this way. It's going to cost you a little more if we have to do it that way because I have to train all my people to do that way. And they understand that. I think we're nervous to have open and honest conversations with their clients, especially in technology, because we tend to be introverts. And we're not comfortable with those genuine kind of relationship conversations. But I've had so many conversations with clients where I would say, I love it when a client will start telling me their personal story because we've connected on a different level and we have a different relationship.
Yeah. And that's what goes back to what you're saying again, was it's about the relationship side. It's not just about the tech side. So let's talk about that, because tech, as you mentioned there, we all know that we're going to either fall into the introvert section, or we're going to fall into the imposter syndrome section. We're just going to bow down and get on with what we want to do. Or worse, we keep pushing ourselves to be the cleverest person in the room. Right. All of those things are not good to building great relationships when it comes to building a tech company. So what kind of advice and insights could you share with us on the starting to build? What does a good relationship look like? And then how do tech entrepreneurs and founders start moving towards that, as opposed to saying, this is my tech, this is my baby, you should be buying it because it's great.
So you just went right into what I've told you, that I'm writing a book right now, and that it is all about that. Because it starts with these, I would say it's these things. It's not the finger pointing at you, it's the three are pointing back at me. Do you know yourself? Do you know what your skills are? Do you know what your abilities are? Have you done one of those assessments to find out? Like, I am an extreme extrovert. One of my mentors would say, everybody else will know Derek's solution before he will, because he has to talk his way through it. That's who I am. And I've become comfortable with that. I used to be uncomfortable with it because I used to think I was just talking too much. And it's really, I'm trying to figure out what other people need, what's happening. But if you're not that person and you're trying to be it, I've seen so many tech guys think that they're salespeople. And then when you talk to them, they don't even know how to listen. And a salesperson's number one role should be to listen, not talk. So I think it's really the first most important thing, if you want to develop that, is to learn who you are, because then you can figure out what you don't have. So if I was an introvert and I was running an IT company, I would hire an extrovert. It would annoy the heck out of me. I wouldn't like them, but they would have the ability to communicate and talk with other people that I don't have. And vice versa. For me, I know I need a really good, strong operations person that will tell me to shut up, because I'll talk too much and I'll take them on paths that we don't need to go on. So it's really learning about yourself and knowing yourself, and then getting a team around you. And I'm big on the team. That's the relationship on it. You know, if you have a really solid, good team, that makes up such a huge difference on how you structure and you're willing to listen to it.
Yeah, and I think there tends to be this, you know, birds of a feather. You know, they tend to flock together, and I think we see that in tech a lot, where you've said, look, you need the opposite. You need that balance between, you know, the introvert and the extrovert, as it were, for that balance. But we see in this industry so often that the birds come together, and the better I know you, the better we're going to fit. But all you're now doing is just conglomerating more of you and more of the stuff that you're not doing outside, which you should be doing. So when it comes to finding a team, how does an introvert find an extrovert? How does an introvert go out and, number one, find one, but then know they're going to work together? Because there's going to be this obvious clash from the get-go. But that's what you're kind of looking for, isn't it?
Well, if you think about it, a healthy marriage. My wife is an introvert, I'm an extrovert. Healthy marriage, you challenge each other, right? You don't just placate the other person and just kind of continue down your path. It's when you're challenged and you work through things and you learn. I think it's the same thing. You're getting into marriage with somebody who's on your team, and you need to know who those people are. So like, I have a couple of people on my team currently who I've got long-standing relationships with. I know them very well. A couple newer people that are on their team that I'm having to learn how to navigate that relationship. And that's part of the growth, part of the structure. And I think it's important. I would start going back to the book idea. There's a whole section in my book about getting counsel. And to me, it's about finding someone who you trust who is not in your organization. So I have two mentors, actually, that I would say explicitly trust. One's more on a personal level for me, and one is for our company. And they are people who I will go to and say, I'm having this struggle with this issue. And they will typically say, well, you're playing the extrovert, and this person's playing the introvert. And you've got to have a conversation about that. Be open about it. And that, I'm also a big believer in the vulnerable leadership, like being willing to share yourself and being willing to be open to conversations and hard topics, and know that I'm not challenging you personally, I'm challenging the situation and having those conversations. We had one member of our leadership team before who was not open, and it really caused problems, because three or four of us were saying we have a problem here, but we couldn't get through to the other person because they were so closed off. Extreme introvert who wasn't willing to look at that and just say, that's who I am and that's how I behave. He kept trying to dance around it, and it caused a lot of problems with the organization. So it's also getting that counsel. It was one of the mentors who said to me, this isn't going to work with him in that role. And so you have to have those hard conversations. And it was actually part of the reason we sold the company, because he was part of the partnership.
Yeah. Well, this is having an outside point of view as a CEO, as a founder. Yes. The buck often stops with us. And, you know, like you, I'm a great believer in having outside counsel, a mentor, somebody you can, if nothing else, becomes your whiteboard, becomes your, you can just mouth off towards them and just see a different perspective that you cannot see, the wood from the trees, as it were, because you're so involved in the day-to-day business. And I'm, as I said, a great advocate for that. I want to talk about growth. You mentioned some figures.
Let's divert a little bit. Can I add something? I'd just like to add something to that. I think it's important for that mentor to be engaged with your team. So Roger, who's my mentor, he comes to a lot of our company offsites and engages with our team. So when I'm talking to him, he knows the other players. If he just knows me, he's going to get my view, which may not be the best view, right? If he's got some interaction with the other players, he can actually give me a different perspective. I just wanted to.
That's a really, really good point. Really good point. Like I say, let's talk about some numbers. You've had some massive growth, and for some of them, when I announce this number, they're going to go, "What, really? 20% growth?" But this isn't just 20% 1 year. You've had success at 20% year on year. To some, that's going to go, "Wow, that's just an astronomical thing." But I don't want to really talk about the actual growth itself. One of them is the lessons we learn from rapid growth, because yes, you can have growth and it sounds really great that you're doing really well, but there's also lessons that you're going to have to learn along the way because things are going to suffer. What kind of lessons did you learn from that rapid growth period that you think people need to know about?
Well, I think we started with, if you want that kind of growth, you have to get operations out of the way. You know, you have to challenge operations, and they need to be made aware. We have a sales funnel. We have all that structure put in place so that they know what's coming. But when you first hit that kind of growth, if you've been like a lifestyle company and all of a sudden you're going to change, they are going to balk. And they're going to find ways to scuttle deals either before they happen or even after, where we lose clients because they don't onboard them quickly enough, et cetera. You know, how you think through, I find a lot of MSPs that I've dealt with will think about the operational impact of sales before they have any sales. Mm. What that means is you get stuck in this loop. And you keep changing the operational loop, but you got no sales coming in. It's focus on getting sales coming in, and it will be pain and you will break something. Be okay with that. I was okay with breaking our operations team. So the first time we had growth, I tell you the story. When I first took over sales before we acquired the company, they had the most clients they'd ever landed in 1 year was one. And that was like every few years they would land a client because they were replacing revenue. And they would find a client, they would figure out how to make it work, and they would shove it at shoehorn it in and continue on the same revenue, right? They weren't really growing. They were just doing the same thing. When I took over that first year, we landed 7 clients. You would have thought the whole world fell down because the operations team were like, they're horrible. How do you do this clients? Because the operations team was not a growth minded team. So you also have to change the mindset and the culture of the operations team to be growth minded. The year we hit 20% growth, we landed 27 clients that year, like two plus a month. And I broke operations again, right? They weren't prepared for that. They saw it coming, but they just didn't want to accept it. By the second time we did 20% growth, they now had an onboarding team. They had an onboarding process. All the stuff that you need to do from an operational standpoint, you have to get in place, but you have to push to get it in place. And they'll see it or they'll exit. I mean, we did have some people exit that didn't want to live that kind of life where we're moving, we're graining people. And, you know, the nice thing right now, we're starting a company where we're focused. I mean, we've been 6 months in or so, and we've already landed almost 10 clients. And we're going to be on that same growth path. And so the operations team is being built with that mindset. Not taking
yeah, absolutely only. Starting. So that's a really interesting point. If you're spending too much, just dissect that a little bit. If you're spending, and we do see founders do that, they spend too much on the operations side too early when they haven't really got the clients. And it should be the clients who dictate that to a degree. Otherwise, it's just your head. It's just your mind and your vision of what it should be, as opposed to the clients actually dictating what they need and whatnot. But then again, you need to have a flexible operations as you grow. Otherwise, you then get stuck and plateaued. Like we said right at the very beginning today, there are many, many leaders and founders who are listening to this who have hit a plateau, whether that be 1 million, 5 million, 10 million. They just hit this plateau and can't quite break through it. But the flexibility then has to come in from the operations side. In order to have that growth.
And I think it's fair to say that, like, we put structure in place on the sales side that said, this is what we're selling. We said, here's where we can be flexible. And I would have conversations if it was, I'll say 10% outside the lines either way, I would have a conversation with our operations team and say, leader, and say, I really want to sell this because I think we can get them into our bucket, but it's going to be fairly far out. Maybe it's going to be 20% outside the line. And he would say, all right, well, we'll struggle through it and we'll get them moved over. And we have a thing where for the next 6 to 9 months, we're not going to probably be profitable with Glide. Mm-hmm. We're going to break even. We're going to make sure we make money. And then it ramps up and we get real profitability because we need to get them moved into our way of doing things. And a lot of them will fight that. And so you have to have a lot of conversations. That's where the relationship comes.
That's a really, very, very interesting thing is making sure they have the flexibility. But if they don't want to stay, then that's right. Then let them exit and they will find where they naturally will land. And then you just have the right people within your team. And that's a very important lesson is don't try and hang on to team members that don't fit your vision of your growth. So I want to stick with growth a little bit more. Absolutely.
I'm talking to another IT provider who we're dancing around the idea of maybe joining forces. And he's made some comments about, well, we have a couple people we really don't like. But the getting somebody else in, I'm just like, tomorrow, walk in the office and terminate them. Give them a package, whatever. I truly believe treat people well, but I'm a believer that I'm setting you free. If you're not fit and you don't like it, you're not doing a good job, you're not happy. And so whether you may not recognize it when I lay you off, you're going to be happier down the road because you're going to find something you enjoy. And I want you to find something you enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think make that decision today. Don't wait. So many people wait and say, well, you know, I have to hire somebody else to replace them. You'll find that almost every one of those people are costing you more time. And your team is going to go, thank God you got rid of him. Now let's find somebody that really works in that place. Hire slow, fire fast.
Really good point. Don't be the anchor. Don't let them be the anchor in your business. That's going to hold you down. You know, and wait. You're absolutely right. If you're going to make that decision, make decisions fast, change them slowly. Right, just go in there, make that decision, and then find the right person for it. So I want to stick with growth, as I said, very quickly because. You've had, again, you had massive growth for your old company. You've had tremendous growth with this new company. How are you, what is the key to standing out? You're in a really busy, noisy niche environment. What are you doing to stand out? Like many of the founders and people who are listening today are in that exact same period. They're in this sea of sameness. There just seems to be a lot of noise. It's extremely noisy out there and they're struggling to stand out. What are you doing to make sure that you are standing out to enable to close these deals, you know, apart from just relationships, but you've got to get there first before you can build the relationship. So what is it you're doing to stand out?
Have you ever been in a room with a bunch of IT leaders, owners? What do they talk about?
Themselves.
Themselves and technology.
Yeah.
Right? Rarely do they ask a question of the other person. And if they do, it's like, what technology do you use? I am a big believer, and I say this all the time, I'll give you a great example. We are replacing all the windows in our house, which is a gang load of money to do, right? And so I had two sales guys come from two different companies and pitch me on being the company that changes our windows out. The first guy found out that a couple of years ago, I got my pilot's license. He asked me questions. He wants to go for a flight. We connected on a personal level. Guess who won the deal?
Yeah, they got it. Yeah, the personal guy.
His price was actually better too, but the other guy spent an hour and a half here, didn't ask me a personal question once. Mm. And I think a lot of people are scared to do that. I always joke that I will say this to a client if I'm talking to a potential client, is I want a good enough relationship that I'm at your retirement party and you're at mine. And I genuinely mean that. I have some clients that I love. I've gone to Indianapolis for an event and drove 2 hours to visit one of our clients because I like him so much. And it wasn't a sales call. It was I like him. I want to see more about his company and blah, blah, blah. And I think that's where a lot of tech owners make the mistake. They think it's all about the tech. It's really about the personal relationship because they're not going to make a decision. I just had a call today with a potential client who said, I'm not real happy where I'm at because I don't have a relationship with anybody. Mm-hmm. So we, as a new company, we use the Traction model. And one of the things that it talks about is creating your primary process. Mm-hmm. We are creating a relationship process. And it's all about how do you connect? So this guy, his contact, his relationship with his provider left. He has no relationship with the provider. Intentionally, we plan that we will fill that relationship. Intentionally. We will find somebody who's going to go meet with him, take him out to lunch, get to know him, become his friend, become his partner. And that I think is our differentiator, where I haven't said anything about technology in that whole conversation, right? No. It has nothing to do with technology at that level.
It's the people. It's down to the people, isn't it? It's always down to people. And I want to share a story because, and I would like those who are listening here to try what I did, because it was an experiment on the long same lines. And I would meet someone for the first time, and I'd be on a quick call with them. And so tell me a little bit about yourself. And it's a 30-minute call. 25 minutes into that call, they then ask me a question about me. Because for 25 minutes, they've just gone on, talked about themselves and their technology and what they're doing and how great it is and all that. And knowing full in them, oh, I've just suddenly realized the time. What can I ask about you? So my question to anyone listening here is, we're going to diverse a little bit. My question is, try that out for yourself. Go and have a conversation with somebody in tech, a potential client or whatever the case may be, and see how long they talk about themselves, but let them.
That's the hard part.
Yeah. Is let them do it and just time them, you know, but be fully present, listen to what they're actually saying. But when you do that, you begin to see that it's almost a human flaw. It's not just in tech, it is a human flaw, but we can change that, and we can change that for the better and build better relationships, like you said, Derek. It's really important.
We have like a guiding document when we talk to people, and it has all the tech questions you want. And I always tell people, you should never go off that document. Because if you go off just asking questions over and over again, like I'm a big believer is I shouldn't be talking, I should be asking you questions. Mm. All earlier today, the guy started the conversation with, I'm really happy, I'm not upset with my provider, it's working okay. By the end of the call, he was talking about how he didn't have a relationship with anybody, right? And that's because I just asked questions. I will tell you, that's my note scratch from one call for 20 minutes of all the things. And then I took that information and filled out the document that we fill out to figure out what. You know, we might miss a question here or there, but I'd rather miss a question and get a connection. The nice thing is this guy is he's in chemical manufacturing. I've had two clients that were chemical manufacturers. Turns out one of them is his clients. We made a connection, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm listening for. So I am always listening when I get on the phone is how can I connect with this person on a personal level? Mm-hmm. Whether it be the flying thing I mentioned earlier with the window guy or this guy who works in chemicals and turns out that I know some of the same people he knows.
But the important thing is not to force that, isn't it? If you ask the right questions and you actively listen, being listening is the right, as you said, it's not about the talking. It's about asking the right questions, but then actively listening. You will find that connection if you listen hard enough, if you listen long enough. Yeah. Now, what I tend to find is people would ask a question, they get one answer back, and then they want to talk again. And really, if you just ask people more and more questions, they will talk to you and they will share with you something about themselves that you can connect with on a truly authentic way, not the false, oh, I see you do fishing. Oh, I see you went to that school. You know, that falseness around it.
It's funny. The client I mentioned that's in Indiana, I actually, in a conversation one day, he's been a client for a long time, but he happened to say, yeah, my daughter swims on a high school swim team or something. And I swam competitively growing up through college. And it started a whole conversation. The reason I was out in Indiana was going to the Olympic swimming trials, which his wife and daughter came to, and we met there. I didn't meet him. I met his wife and daughter and talked about swimming, and it was all about swimming. It had nothing to do with my company or his company or any of that stuff. And then I went out and visited with him. So I think there's so much to that that I always say, if I've got healthy relationships with people, financially, I'll be fine. Our company will be fine. It's when I'm focused on, I got to get a sale. I've got to get this person. And I tell that to sales guys all the time. If they're focused on their commission, they're going to have a hard time selling, especially in this industry.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you want to stand out, you want to do well, you want to close more deals, ironically, isn't pushing for the deal. Ironically, if you take it over time, it will be about that building relationships, but build it on a real level, not this false level, not this, oh, we have a great relationship because he asked, because I'm cleverer than him and I can help him. It's not for her. It's not about that type of relationship. It's about the actual person.
I will actually That's give you a great thing. Example of that if you want. Failures. This is a failure. So there's a franchise company here in New Jersey, Daycare Centers, who I met through one of my mentoring groups. The CEO had turned me over to their operations person, who's now the CEO. And she and I did some work together. This was previous company. We did a whole review of their environment, gave them recommendations. The person I had in charge of doing that made a huge mistake. I mean, it's Daycare Group. You don't do certain things with Daycare Groups. And he did something that got us fired. I was fired in the best way I've ever been fired. She was so amazing. I still meet with her every month as a mentor. And I've never done business with her again. And I don't expect to ask her to ever do business with her again. Because genuinely, I'm going to learn from her because she did something so wonderful. So I think it's important for leaders to also understand some of your, what you consider your worst clients or your worst failures could be your best. She has been a huge gift to me as far as being a mentor and thinking about how I do things. And she shares stuff with what's going on with her. And we built a relationship that I cherish. And it doesn't matter that I lost that deal.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. That really is a good point, is that you can have great life and business lessons from the mistakes that you made. Those mistakes aren't failures. Those mistakes are learning blocks. But if you, it's almost like, yes, you've got to look forward all the time. But sometimes when you fail or fall over, learn from, consciously learn from them. Consciously learn from them and go, what is the best I can take out of it? Rather than what is the worst that I could be left with? What is the best I can take out of that and learn from that?
I think that goes back to the three fingers point back at me. Am I willing to be humble enough to say, what did we do wrong? How do we fix it? How do we never do that again? It was a bad thing that happened. And, you know, the person who did it had to acknowledge that they did it and shouldn't have. And, you know, it wasn't like nobody's going to jail or anything, but it just was the wrong thing to do. And, you know, all of us had to acknowledge it and take time. And I think what I see a lot of companies do is they start to point the finger back at the client. Oh, well, they just didn't understand. It didn't matter. We shouldn't have done it. You know, they try to rationalize it for themselves. And growth to me means you have to look at those things so that you don't do them again, because you won't grow, because you're going to be stuck in that cycle. How do you move past?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I've got one final question for you, Derek. You've shared so much with us today, you know, and that time has just gone flown by as it normally does. Yeah, it's always great when we have great guests, because it just means that time just goes while we're chatting and sharing and whatnot. So, I suppose my loaded question to you would be this, Derek. From everything you've learned, from initially being in IT support to building a company to buying a company that didn't really work to mergers that didn't really work to super growth, you know, to understanding to now writing a book about that. If there was one takeaway you wanted people to learn from today, from everything that you've learned, what would that be?
So I'm going to go to my book, because that's what my book is about. It's called The Power of We, and it's about the other people. It's not about me. It's... Mm-hmm. When I get focused on me and I've got to fix it, I've got to solve it, as soon as I start using I a lot, I'm in trouble, especially with an organization that's got to grow and I can't be in all places all the time. And so I have to build a team. I have to build my we that can help me grow. And I'm so excited about the new one that I have right now, because I've got a lot of really open people who are excited about doing things and excited about learning about themselves. Mm. So I would encourage it, if you could take anything about, you need to look at your team. Start with yourself. How do you, you know, what do those three fingers look like at you? And then start looking at how are you building your team, and are you being the best leader you can be?
Absolutely. Well, what a great place to land on this podcast episode. So if people want to get to know you, want to get in touch with you or know more about you or what you do, or potentially work with you, or even about your book, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, it'd be easy to look me up on LinkedIn and just connect with me on LinkedIn. Or you can email me. It's derek.hahn. My name's there on the screen. At affinitymsp.com.
Well, I'll make sure I'll put those links in the show notes so people can just do a straight click and get hold of you. Well, Derek, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here today.
Gary, I would say that I'm open to talking to anyone. I would love it. I mentor some people now. If people needed help, I'm very open to those conversations.
Well, that's very generous of you. And I'm sure, you know, that there is so much insights that you shared with us today that I'm sure that, there'll be people out there that can really, really benefit from it. So again, Derek, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for your time and your insights today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us as well for yet another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. No doubt you have taken some great insights from Derek here today. Please make sure you like and maybe comment of what you've taken away from there so that others can learn. But more importantly, as it is about focusing on growth and everyone's growth, please make sure you share this episode, share what you've learned so that others can succeed as well. So until next time, keep striving, keep being profitable, keep standing out, and we'll see you on the next episode.